Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hagan. I'm working at
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, hello, everyone. It's a brand new week here with Chuck Bonneville and Julie Hayden in the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show. Two straight up.
Brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture, and Chinese Medicine. So we have Tom Tancredo coming up. And you talked to him about this before. He was the former head of the Colorado Department of Education region. And I mean, his stories will make your
skin crawl.
Your skin crawl about all the waste there. And then at 3:30, we've got Rich Wyatt, newly elected chair of the Jefferson County GOP. But we've got Tom with us. So, hey, Tom, thank you once again for your time.
How are you? Hey, Tom.
Hi, guys. How you doing today? I'm
good,
so happy.
Good.
I mean, I usually really don't like football games that are blowouts, but I have to tell you, I loved every minute of this one.
Really? You hate Kansas City?
Yesterday. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was great. I loved it. And it was so funny. I think it was the Babylon Bee today said the Eagles were fined, or I mean received a call against them for roughing the passer when because of the way they shook hands at the beginning of the game. anyway, it was a lot of fun, except for the halftime show. What a piece of junk that was.
That was. And we'll get to the education, but you're right. Rev likes Kendrick Lamar, who apparently is a hot rising rep.
Oh, yeah.
But I couldn't understand anything.
I understand.
They said, no, although for a brief aside, here's what I was reading an analysis. People like you and I and Chuck, Tom, they don't care about us anymore. The whole Kendrick,
for sure.
They didn't care if we hated the halftime show because we're already watching it, right? The whole thing is it was on Apple Music. So the whole point of this I was reading was to get kids like our son, Rev, to like listen to the halftime show over and over and over again on Apple Music. And so then they make money that way. So it was.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it was all about boosting the streaming end of it. They could have cared less whether we watched it or didn't watch it because we were already tuned in. And Apple Music didn't make money off
it. We don't matter anyway.
Yeah, we don't matter anyway. So.
No, I guess, I don't even need them to tell me that. But.
Yeah, we were aware of that. Hey, we wanted to talk to you.
I'm well aware of it.
You had a great Facebook post talking about, the Department of Education and Elon Musk and Doge, and now Trump saying we need to get rid of the Department of Education. And you have a little experience there, don't you? Why don't you tell us about that?
I do. Sure. Absolutely. Well, first of all, you have to understand, I had been in education for a long time. Most of the legislation I ever dealt with, whether it was state legislature, or, of course, then as the regional director of the department, or even when I was at the Independence Institute, it was almost always education. And I put a ballot issue together in 92, I believe it was, for Colorado. I raised the money, wrote it out for a voucher system. I had been a public school teacher, my wife for 27 years, brother, sister-in-law, everybody in my family, my little kid once, about 8 years old, and some came in. I remember him, Ray, saying, "Daddy, on television, there are other jobs." Because everybody he ever knew, his family, everybody was a teacher. At any rate, I say that only because I have a background in it. What I'm saying is a result of what I observed, both as a teacher in the Jefferson County public school system, and then as a bureaucrat in the U.S. Department, and as the chairman of, I was the chairman of the education committee in the state legislature, and served on the House Education Committee for the first term. Anyway, say all that because I'm very, very, very critical of the system I worked in, the system I observed. It is broken. It is fractured beyond. I always compare it to, you know, a train that many people on it, all the people that work on it, are kind of working as hard as they can, oftentimes, not everybody, but often. And so you got a lot of good teachers, you got a lot of good administrators, but they're working their ass off. They're shoveling coal into the thing as fast as they can. They're doing all the things they can as hard as they can. The problem is, it's the wrong system. No matter how hard you work, that train is not going to fly. And we need something that will fly, something that will supersede all of the stuff that has come before it, and a brand new system. And so the Department of Education, it really is a drag on that, because of course it was a sop to the teachers union, to the NEA. How it started, it has nothing to do with education, nothing. Carter wanted to get the NEA to endorse him. They did, and he told them as a result he'd create the department. He did that. Came into office, Reagan came in a year, and it had only been in existence at that time for about a year and a half. And the administration, Reagan, could not find a single member of Congress that would be willing to introduce a bill to get rid of it. And only been there a year and a half, remind you.
Wow.
But already the dollars were flowing so quickly and so forcefully, so much that there's no way, you know, you already built this constituency. They were relying on it. They knew that opening the tap, the federal government tap, would really enhance their coffers. So we couldn't get rid of it that way. So, and we were not as smart as Elon Musk and Trump, because we didn't know another way to do it except to say, let's try to implode it. And
right.
That's the kind of message I got when I got a call from a guy was a headhunter for Reagan, and this is 1981. And the guy said, your name has been given to us as someone who might want to serve in this administration. Of course, I had been a Reagan delegate in 80 and a Reagan surrogate speaker. And I said, are you kidding? I mean, you know, who do I have to kill? And he said, no, you don't have to kill anybody. But I said, well, yeah, of course, absolutely. Good Lord, I'd do anything for this guy. And he goes, I said, well, in what capacity? He said, U.S. Department of Education. And I said, don't take this wrong, please. I'm flattered beyond belief, but no. And the guy goes, what do you mean? And I said, no, I don't. And he said, why? I said, because I don't believe we should have a U.S. Department of Education. And I have stated that on 1,000 occasions as a teacher and everything else. And he said, well, that's why we're calling you. So I thought, well, okay. If that's the case, maybe we can talk. And we did, and we eventually came around to these regional offices. Now, I did not want to go to Washington, so I told them that. So they said, well, we're going to make these regional offices. You know, they're there, and they're a political appointment. I said, what is it? What is the regional office? I've never heard of it. He said, oh, yeah, well, there's, you know, we send out checks every couple of weeks. There, somebody gets them there. So they're out there. And so I said, well, okay. So I go look, 18th and Stout Federal Building. That's where we were at the time. I walked in and looked at the elevator thing, and it said Department of Education, floor, boom, 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 three floors.
I thought, wow. Okay.
And yeah, there was 222, I believe. That's what sticks in my mind. I know it was over 200.
Wow.
And so I said, yeah, sure. This will be fun. We can maybe get rid of this thing. So I naively went in. I remember this. Now, I went in at the end of September, probably the third week in September of 1981. And the fiscal year for the federal government ends October 1st. So I get this call. I'd only been there a few days. And I get a call from the head shed in Washington. And some guy says, yeah, this is so-and-so Department of Education. He said, we got to know what you're going to do with the $72,000 that's in your can. And and I thought, would somebody go in the bathroom and throw 70 grand into, what do you mean, my can? What is it? I don't understand. And he goes, no, it's your account. You got $72,000. What are you going to do with it? I said, well, I'm not going to do anything with it. I said, but don't worry. I said, now that I understand what you're talking about, don't worry, because next year at this time, there's going to be a lot more money than that in there, and you can have it all back. And he goes, oh, you don't understand. He says, you know, can you prove that you purposely didn't underspend your budget? And I said, are you crazy? I've been here about 5 days, maybe that much. And no, I can't prove I didn't underspend it, but I will try my best to underspend. No, he said, you don't get it. He says, it's against the law. And I said, what? He says, yeah. Nixon impounded some money, kind of like what, you know, Trump is doing, I guess. He impounded some money that the Congress had appropriated. And they came back with a thing that said, hey, stupid, your job is to spend it. Ours is to appropriate it. Yours is to spend it. And made it a law, and you could be thrown in jail or whatever, fines. I said, well, do me a favor, just let me know right before they're coming to throw me in jail, so I can get the press here and have as many cameras as possible filming it when you put the cuffs on me for underspending my budget. Are you kidding?
And for saving taxpayers' money, so
yeah, right. So I hung up the phone, and probably 10 seconds later, there was nothing left in my can. It had all been moved to the secretary's can, and all by October 1st. So that was my first introduction to the waste, fraud, abuse, whatever you want to say. It's horrendous. Then I started trying to go to each person. Now, I had a personal staff, again, if I remember correctly, it was about 20 or more personal, or my staff, part the different, this is the regional representative staff, not the Department of Higher Education or any of the other three or four others, but my own. And I'd go into each one and I'd say, hi, I'm Tom Dunn, I'm the record secretary's regional. What do you do here? And everybody would first start by saying, I'm a GS something, right? And I said, that's interesting. What do you do here? He said, well, I'm an ed tech. You'd hear that a lot. Ed tech. What's an ed tech? I don't know. So I said, well, let's do it this way. I come in. I mean, you come in the morning, you turn on a light, you sit down at that desk, because they all had offices, by the way, not just
Well, three floors,
And he said, I said, you come in, you turn on the light, you sit down at the desk. Then what happens? Maybe you have to start there. Nothing. I mean, it was horrendous. Many of these people, believe this or not, their job, and they were making, well, depending on what their GS level was, but between $35,000, $40,000 a year. Now, this is 1980, mind you. Okay, 81. That is a lot of money. Was a lot of money, and now they're all probably making 100. But so that was, and they came in, and their job often was a couple of cut out newspaper articles from the six states that were about education, and well, you know, compile them, and I don't know what they did with them, but that was their job. That was their job. Oh my God, it got worse. I got so many examples. I said in the article that you referenced, the posting, that I could really write a book about just the horror stories that I found. One, I walked down the hall, go into this lady's office. Her name was Dottie. And I said, hi, what are you doing? What do you do? I'm a GS animal. But he said, well, I'm the regional office librarian. And I said, oh, well. You're a librarian. Yeah. I said, where's the library? And she said, well, you passed it on the way down here. I said, how could I have done that and missed it? I don't understand. She says, come on. She gets up and she's quite proud of it. It's not like she's trying to hide this. She and I walk back down the hall. She stops me at one certain point. I said, here it is. I said, here it is, huh? And I'm looking at a three-tier magazine rack. That goes, you know, about maybe 30 feet or so, I don't know, down the hall. And I said, this is the library. Yeah. I said, who uses this library? What are these? Well, they're magazines like Education Week and things. And everybody, I'm sure, he says, oh, yeah, we use it a lot, research stuff. Right. Oh, yeah. And my job is to, of course, take out old magazines, put new ones in. Hers, and by the way, if I remember correctly, it was $33,000.
Wow.
So I thought to myself, well, this is a good one. We can get rid of it. And I'm just checking off in my mind all the ones that can go right away. Yeah, because they got nothing to do here. And
right.
So there's another guy. His he had been bounced around. He had filed the OEO complaints as a black fellow. And he was, when I went into him, he was really quite bright. He said me right off the back what he did. He was the regional office, federal real property officer, right? And I said, oh, my gosh, well, what's that? Well, he said, I said, oh, yeah, it's a big program. He said, the federal government has lots of real property, houses, land, and that sort of thing. And they access it periodically, don't need it anymore. I remember, by the way, the missile silos up in Wyoming were part of it. And so I said, oh, well, and what's your job? He said, well, I have to, I find if a thing comes up and an education entity wants it, so land, houses, or whatever, then I facilitate the process of moving it over to them. What does that mean? Well, they have to tell me what they're going to do with this land, and I have to review it, make sure 3 years go by that they're doing what they say, and then I can give them the deed to the land. And I said, oh, that's very good. I said, well, how long have you been here? He said, 5 years. I said, how many pieces of land have you, or a piece of property have you transferred? He goes, well, there's quite a few in the pipeline. And I said, Oh, pipeline. Okay. Well, I said, how many have you reviewed? He said, well, we've never had any travel money. And I said, so let me get this straight. 5 years, not one piece of property transfer. No, I said, so I thought, there's number two already. Bang. Oh, man, we're going to have a lot of fun. Well, it went on like that. And honestly, I have to tell you, some of these people came in at a time when there was something to do there. They had a program that they were involved. And all of these, and then the Secretary of Education under Carter, Califano, I believe, centralized all the activities again from Washington, from these regional offices, that left all the people.
So there's
but
nothing
they
to
had
them.
Nothing,
yeah.
Nothing to do. And what you find out quick, because I thought, oh my God, this is going to be a zap. Look at all these people having nothing, no real job. Even the ones who pretended to have a real job didn't. And
right.
I mean, if they said they were a program of such and such, it was insignificant crap that nobody would ever. And so I start trying to figure out a way to get rid of them. Well, I find out that, again, within just a week or so, I've got not just the civil service system to deal with, which is in and of itself the most god-awful, horrible bulwark against any reform that you ever saw. But on top of it, we've got a union, a frigging union for federal employees. And so I'm thinking, and they say, oh, you'll never, in the federal government, they told me, you, just because you do not have a job to do, does not mean you can be dismissed, because
wow.
it is the supervisor's job to find them something to do. That is exactly what they told me.
Yeah. Oh,
so,
well, let me interrupt you a second. So, I mean,
go ahead anytime, because I'll go on forever.
You guys, your stories are like insane. And this was then. I mean, God knows how much more bloated.
I was just thinking my own
right,
talents.
Right.
I would have been 31 or 32. Probably working 18 hours a day doing litigation.
Yeah.
Why didn't I know about these jobs?
That's
Jesus
right.
Christ.
then you hear people say, I read all these things, all these people who won't take the buyout, they're sticking around because they're going to stick it to Trump. And, they don't, and everybody knows, I just saw one of them posted, that we do it. The private sector gets 25% more doing what we do. Oh, God, is that a bullshit lie you've ever heard in your life? I tell you right now, there is not a single person in the 200 people that eventually, almost 200 people that we were able to get rid of over 4 years, and I can explain what I had to do to do it, but not one of them could ever have gotten a job in the private sector that made even what they made, let alone 25% more for in the private. And they knew it. And that is exactly why they won't leave. They've got a cushy arrangement getting paid more than they could ever get paid in the private sector for what they're doing. And right. I even had people threatening them. I had one guy who said he was going to kill himself and everything because he couldn't, you know, he couldn't believe it. His age 50, he couldn't go out and do anything. And I remember telling him, I said, you know, Ed, I said, I remember, I looked at some of your stuff that you did when you came in here and you were project director. For, I said, you know, you're a good writer. And they said, you, but now I look at your stuff. And I said, I said, you know, at one time you were an eagle and now you're a penguin because you have never used your skill and your atrophy here. And that's what we're doing to all these people. It was horrible. Not right. just a horrible thing to the taxpayer. It was a horrible thing to them. And we'll never forget the guy who was the head, he was the IG, Inspector General. Region had one, right? It's the attorney. And I remember him coming in, and he is GS 15, which is the highest, you know, pay. Right. And we talked, and he was a nice guy. I liked him. So depressed. He said, I can hardly stand it here. He said, you know what the most important thing I've done here for the last year or something? He said, I have to find a, because this at this point in time, by the way, it was Bennett. By the way, I went through five secretaries, right? None of them wanted to get rid of the department. None of them. Bennett was no different, I have to tell you. And anyway, he wanted to come out and ski. And so the AG, I had to find something for him. I had to, like, be his agent, you know, and go, wouldn't you like to have the secretary come and speak to your Rotary Club or whatever? And then he came out, and then my IG had to be the, had to provide quote security, so he had to go with him. And he said, I was just the biggest jerk. And so he was just disappointed because he didn't have any real job either. And I said, why the hell don't you quit? You're an attorney. You have a lot of experience. I'm sure you could get something. He goes, oh man, buddy, it's golden handcuffs.
Oh well, why do you think about the way then?
Can you imagine what happened when all these hardworking people? COVID came and they're all working from home, slaving away.
Yeah. Slaving away.
What do you think about the way that, I mean, you got to, and we can talk, we'll talk about this more later on in the show, but about the way that Trump is doing this, and they had this all lined out where he's just saying, I keep talking, it's kind of like Godzilla came to Washington, D.C. with his giant things. And he's like, Department of USA, gone, you know, Department of Education, right. Gone. I mean, it's like no one ever thought of that before, right? Everybody thought, oh, you're gonna, and we don't Congress, have time for you to go through your processes, but I know you've talked about it before, how hard it was to get rid of these people. Then Trump is like, gone, buyout, gone.
The buyout people, all the people who are about to retire within that time period, and they go, well, do I get an extra 5 months of, you know, doing nothing?
Right.
I
mean,
at least we get rid of them. But right. What do you think of this approach?
Well, I love it. I must admit, I don't, you know, I don't understand how he can do it. But God bless him and Doge and Elon, because they may have figured out a way. I mean, you know, he's in court for every one of those things, right? Everybody's trying to stop him. So, and everybody's filing, and all these judges are filing temporary restraining orders and stuff. So I do not know how he's going to do it. I just know these are the smartest people on the planet that are working with Elon. And I also know that they've had, you know, quite some time. I don't know how many years during Trump was not in office, but hoping to come back. But I wonder if they were working on a lot of these things, you know.
That's what there was a kid on X who was explaining, yes, there are roughly 1,000 people Who have been, I mean, there's a core group, but they were ready. They had a plan. They knew what to do. They knew where they were going to go. And he said, and they hit the ground. I think he was saying at 2 a.m. January 21st. But when he goes, everybody was in their offices and they just ran these algorithms. And I don't understand enough about AI, but he said it was kind of like watching the galaxy map itself. It would kind of go here and they'd be like, oh, look, what's this? Oh, no, nothing in the Department of Treasury checks. You know what I mean? It was just like, oh, what's this billion? Yeah. Oh, look here, FEMA just spent this on hotels. They're not supposed to do that. So you're right. It was, I think this was something, and no one saw it coming, right? They all thought, now, and I think what's beautiful, Tom, is they're all filing lawsuits, but they've got to undo what Trump did. It's like for the first time, he's not asking for permission. He's just doing it. And now they have to fight to kind of get it.
And it seems to me that what he can easily defend is the elimination of every one of Biden's executive orders. I mean, if Biden issued an executive order and it was accepted, you know, as legitimate, and then him undoing it as with an executive order seems to me to be unassailable, you know. But now a lot of these things aren't just Biden's. They're, you know, Biden didn't create AID. With an executive order.
Well, a lot of things they have, they had this this conservation one where, you know, you could put under federal control land, and so it couldn't be developed, it couldn't be touched. And this was adopted during Teddy Roosevelt's time in 1905. But there's no undoing it, you know. You can argue, well, if he did it, we should be able to undo it. But so there are all these kind of things you kind of go, well, if you did it by executive order, you should be able to revoke it by executive order. No.
Well, here, and Tom, you'll like this. One of our listeners is saying, beer on my keyboard. My first 8-to-5 job was with the Colorado Department of Education. I swear it was the exact same thing as Tom is describing. Holy crap. So, well, and what do you think about... What do you think about the Democrats' strategy? I mean, they don't have a lane here. They're kind of forced to say, we support corrupt, fraudulent government spending, right? Yeah, I mean, that's...
I love it.
Well,
then
you think we work? You know, we're senators and stuff. We don't do shit. We don't even read the legislation. We certainly don't write the legislation. And you just don't read it. I mean, they go, we don't do shit.
Believe me, they are also, I'm going to say, on the take. And I don't mean necessarily somebody's giving them, you know, gold bricks, like it did to what's his senator just went to jail.
Oh, yeah, Menendez.
Menendez. But they're on the take in a different way, in that the unions, right, the lobbyists who shovel money at them will do so as a result of them maintaining this the swamp and the power that goes with the people who are in it. And so it is a corrupt system from top to bottom. Money has done it. And like I say, to a lot of people, we have really ruined their lives in a way. We've made penguins out of people who at one time at least could fly. I don't know if they're eagles, but it was just so depressing. And to watch, and I'm not kidding. People, this one guy, he told me straight out he's going to commit suicide. Well, he didn't. When we did have to let him go. Now, I have to say, the only way I could do it, I found out that the only power I had was to try my best. Sometimes it failed to get my budget cut, to get the budget cut for the whole. Department, and not just mine, not just because I was already down to two people. Because one was my secretary, as my staff, right? And then there was only one, as they say. And then we went down to one, just her, Sue Fowler's wife. She's a sweetheart. Anyway, I'd go back to Washington and at the budget hearing time. You know, and I would talk to our budget people in the ones that constructed the budget, took it to Congress and begged and all that stuff. And I'd say, look, I'm going to try to, we were all told, all 10 of us, 10 regional representatives were all political appointees under Reagan. And we were all told the same thing. Look, let's try to shut this thing down by going through this, like I say, imploding. So, oh yeah, absolutely. No kidding. So we meet the first time all together in Washington right after we all get appointed. We're going to go see the secretary the next day. And none of us, of course, even met him, even though we're the secretary's regional representatives. He doesn't know us from apple butter. And so, but we all have dinner and talking about how wonderful it is. We're Reaganites. And the one guy goes, now look, you're the only real political person here. And so, I mean, you served and that sort of thing in the legislature. So we're nominating you as the person to kind of represent us there and do the speaking for us with the secretary if they just want to go to one. And I said, well, fine. So the next day we go in, I was sitting on this long table in a big office. The secretary comes in. This was Bill. And don't ask me why, but he was another one. He no more wanted the reform than anybody. Anyway, he said, thank you all for coming, blah, blah, blah. I have to tell you that we're probably going to have to start to tighten our belts because, you know, the budget will probably be. And so I raised my hand and I said, Mr. Secretary, honestly, that's the least of our problems. I said, We've got so much room in our belt that you can't believe it. I said, there's far too many people doing answer. And I'm going on, right? Oh, my God. It's that minute, like every other hand in there goes up and goes, well, no, that's him. You know, you're Mr. Secretary, his office may be like that.
Hey, Tom, listen.
So many things to do.
I hate to do this, but we've got
to.
Oh, yeah, we got to go. Okay. We'll do it again sometime. Because there's lots more.
we got to get you back. That was great.
Tom, thank you so much. Thank you.
You tell Rich I'm really proud of him, okay?
And we will.
And happy.
Yeah.
Okay,
all
yeah.
Right.
Happy as hell.
You're going to have to tell us about when you were at the Independence Institute. That must have been a different time, a different Independence
Institute.
I know, but. That's next time.
All right. Hey, thank you, Tom.
See you guys. All right. Have fun. Bye. Goodbye.
All right. Yeah, I did. We got Rich. Oh, Rich Riott is with us. Hey, Rich, I don't know if you heard. That was just Tom Tancredo saying congratulations. He's so proud of you. And welcome to the Chuck and Julie show.
Oh, thank you guys so much. How joyous. I didn't know who it was, but I love Tom. He's a wonderful man. And we owe him so much for the work he's done with immigration.
That's right. Well, we wanted to talk to you because over the weekend, it was in numerous counties, including Adams, El Paso, Jeffco, some on the Western Slope. The county Republican parties met to elect the new leadership. And after having had the horrid, censored by our own party, Nancy Pelosi was trying to overthrow Dave Williams, the Jeffco Republicans rebelled.
Trying to go in a different direction.
Different direction. And overwhelmingly elected you as the Jefferson County Republican Party chair. So congratulations on that.
Well, thank you very, very much. And it's a very honored to have that. And we got a lot of work to do. We're going to have to roll up our sleeves and get things going. I just left there and we did the peaceful transition of power. And we're all done and we got everything accomplished. And they adjourned the meeting. And so it's all official now.
So how about bonus members? For people who don't know, there's two sides. There's the Rhino establishment side, which are bad people. And then there's the wonderful grassroots. And of course, we're called the Chuck and Julie grassroots. So you may get an inclination which one we like. But Rich is a great grassroots people. And you'd have 20 or so plus bonus members who are very important for the election of the party chair. So how many were grassroots and how many were evil Amoral trolls?
You're still developing the numbers, and I don't have all the numbers for you, Chuck, and they're going to release it in about 2 hours on Jefferson County GOP website, but it went very, very well. So
how many bonus members does Jeffco get?
20 for CD7 and 28 for state party.
And one of the things I know, here's what we wanted to talk to you a little bit about, because we did very well in Adams County, too. It was kind of.
You're looking at two of the people who were bonus members who were beautifully elected by the beautiful people. of Adams County.
Speaking with Ben Nicholas, also another great grassroots guy who was elected in Adams County, and he was pointing out, and I think there's a lot of truth to this, that like 2 years ago, the establishment basically tried to control and did control like everything, right? And in the past couple of years, he said, there has been a growing and increasing, even though the establishment tries to tell you, oh, everybody hates grassroots, right? There has been a growing...
Or call themselves grassroots.
There has been, I think, a growing... involvement and election, basically, and taking over positions of power of the grassroots. Wouldn't you say, or how do you see it kind of shaking out in Colorado?
I see the same thing, and I see the establishment types, the Denise Munn, the Don Rosier, the people like that that, you know, did a lot of things that they shouldn't have done. You know, they didn't even run this time because they knew it would be futile, you know, and so they just kind of walked away and you know, who knows what they're doing now. And, you know, some of them have told me that they were going to leave the party. Well,
you had it all the time. If you, you know, here's a card that'll allow you to get out of the party. And if you could,
when you leave, there's 20 people on the deck that are going to come in because they're tired of you.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
And well, and so how do you think? Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Julie.
I was going to say, and I think that, you know, for so long, people like Dick Wadhams have tried to tell us, oh, Donald Trump is dooming Colorado. Well, Donald, clearly that's not the case, right? And clearly there is.
We heard somebody say that Dick Wadhams was very pleased by your election.
Yeah.
Very pleased.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, just because we have the same first name, you know, because that's where the comparison stops. You know,
but I think that if you're the other side, you have to acknowledge that basically the populist grassroots kind of Make America Great Again movement has clearly taken over the country, and it is making.
But it hasn't taken over Colorado.
But it's making ground, though.
Well, right now, because I pay attention to these things and adding things up, that's why I really want to. Maybe you can give me a call when you get your totals for the state.
Yes, I will, Chuck. Sure, certainly. Yep.
We're totaling it up, and I think we have a slight majority. But you always have to remember, like, Nancy Pelosi was a grassroots person when she got elected.
Todd Watkins.
Todd Watkins was vice president of El Paso County, Mr. Grassroots. But the money and the sleaziness and all that, and, they, you know, all of a sudden they're trying to overthrow the righteous grassroots leadership. So even when we get them.
Well, you know, Chuck, I know exactly what you're talking about. One of the positive things somebody can say about me is they don't have to worry about that.
We know. So where do you see Jefferson County is kind of has been changing, right? It's and you know you and even here in Adams County too, a lot of unaffiliated voters. And what do you say to the people? Because I heard this in Adams County, where they're like, oh, you know, we have a lot of unaffiliated voters, so we need to make our tent bigger. In other words, which it's like, you know, I mean, they always say we need to make our tent bigger to get the unaffiliated voters in. And you're like, who do you think elected Trump? But how do you see things kind of playing out in Jefferson County? Because I think things are changing there too.
Okay. Any more democratic.
Yeah, but
they are. When I started here in Jefferson County, the Democrats didn't even run for office. It was everything was decided at the assembly or the primary because it was just Republicans. That's just the way it was. You didn't have a shot. Now that turned around, and one of the things we have to fix is that. So how do we fix it? Well, I like the Big Ten idea. Bring everybody in. But if you're coming into our tent, you got to be on our side. You can't say I'm over here. But I'm really not with you. I'm over here. No, you want to be in this tent, get in the tent and get on our party and join our party and be part of it. But if we look back and say, where did these things really start to change? When was it that we lost so badly, that we stopped winning? Well, there's a correlation between the mail-in ballots, Dominion voting machines, things of that nature that have come up, and we see a distinct change. So I don't know. It just makes me wonder. You know, back at the police department, we would call that a clue. And so we're going to look into it, and we're going to find out what's going on here. And we're very fortunate. I had a great conversation. I was down at Mar-a-Lago on Thursday night with the Trumps, and I had a great conversation with Eric and Laura. By the way, Laura is phenomenal. I mean, she's unbelievable. I was able to thank her so much for all the work she did with the RNC and making the RNC fun again. And that's one of the things I ran on here is we're going to make this county fun again. We're going to have a good time. And we're going to get kids involved because we need these younger people that, you know, when Trump said, I'm going to fix this TikTok thing, and TikTok closed down for 24 hours or 20 hours, whatever it was, you know, kids were calling 911.
Ron closed his door. Help. He was in mourning. He was in mourning. He hid in his room and wailing in bereavement.
And so, listen, so when it came back on, it said, thank you, President Trump, for fixing it. So those kids are sitting there going, hey, that's my guy, you know?
Right.
I mean, you know, Biden fell down and shut it off and Trump stood up and turned it on. And so, you know, the bottom line is we got to get those people involved. And we do need the big tent. But, you know, it's just like in business. When you have a bad employee that works at your place, it's like a cancer. And you got to get rid of that cancer because that cancer is damaging the good employees. And so, you know, if you've ever had a successful business, you know that. You guys have, and you know that. And so that's one of the things we have to accomplish as well. There's some people that we have that just got to go. You know, because they're not offering anything to anybody. They're not making it better for anybody. And we need it to be better. So we got a lot of work to do.
Well, as a practical matter, and this was part of my brilliant speech to help elect me as a bonus member, I was saying, do you really want people who do not believe in life deciding your candidates? Do you want people who are against the Second Amendment to be voting for your candidates? Do you want people who think the war in Ukraine is great voting for your candidates? Do you want people who want men in women's sports voting for your candidates? When they talk about a big tent, they mean Republicans becoming part of the Democrats' big tent. You're just the same as the Democrats, because that's what independents who want to, you know, the Democrats don't have primaries, really. So they all come over to the Republican Party to pick out the biggest rhino they can find and go, oh, we got to incorporate those people. They will kill you. You know, you won't be a party anymore.
No, that's what they're trying to do. That's what they'd like to see happen. Yeah. And Colorado's an embarrassment. When we only moved 3% towards Trump as a state and less than half of a percent from Jefferson County towards Trump, when New York and California leaps and bounds by double digits, it's an embarrassment. I'm embarrassed, you know, and that's why we got to get involved, and we need everybody to come help us and get involved and fix it, because nobody, you know, no one elected official is going to fix it. Nobody that, you know, takes these jobs can fix it. They need everybody to come in and help them and do things to get it done, you know, and that's what we got to do. And that's where the focus is.
Well, here's another one. For my
do it. We got it made.
Although I'm not given credit or not given evilness enough, I invented mail ballot electioning in Colorado, because in 2002, the Republican Secretary of State, by fiat, said you no longer had to have a reason for absentee voting. All you had to do is put a request in. I went, okay.
You were working in Glendale at the time.
Yeah, I should have been ahead of the world, but I was working in Glendale at the time. No rolling eyes.
For people who are listening to the radio, Julie just rolled her eyes and gagged there. But all right, go ahead, continue, Chuck.
So and so, God, this is great. And so we started mail balloting, you know, and then going around and collecting them. And ever since then, you know, if you go about and pick up ballots and everything else, and your opponents don't, you win every time. And so unless we start picking up ballots, which also allows you to know who you have to concentrate on for the last 10 days to get them out to vote, you can't win. And yet we have, you know, Republicans are on average a little slow. Let's face it. Let's be honest. They're on average a little slow. They're all going, we must all vote on election day, and we can't give in to mail ballot election. You kind of go, you don't have to give in to the three-point shot in basketball, but unless you recognize there's a three-point shot, and that's what you're playing with, you can fight as hard as you get rid of it, but until you get rid of it, you better figure out how to win. And there's, You know, it's hard a lot of it. Oh, no, we must never do mail ballot collecting and so forth. And you go, well, then just lose. Could you just please go to the Libertarian Party? They're good at losing.
Yeah.
Please just head over there. You'll feel very good. Yeah, you'll feel very good. So for Jeff and Adams County, quite frankly, because all the money poured in from the national, from the Americans for Prosperity, they actually did ballot collect.
For Gabe Evans.
Yeah, for Gabe Evans, who's not my favorite, but they did. We came really close to winning lots of races just because of that.
Well, what do you, so let me, because we only have a couple more minutes with you, Rich. What do you, I guess, where do you go now? Okay, so we got Jefferson County. You guys, grassroots are, I think.
Ascendant.
I don't want to say took control because there's too many people for somebody to have control. But the grass.
Well, a chair controls. It tries to control. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
So where. No,
we definitely took control. And they got a wake up call and they realized it's over, you know?
Yeah.
And there's, you know, that we're back. And, so here we come. I mean, come on, you know, they can't pick this guy right here and not know what's going to happen. You know,
they got a wake up call with a knife across their throat as you finish them off. That's their wake up call.
There's a lot of Sunday was a day of rest for people because they couldn't get out of bed, you know, thinking, oh my God, what am I going to do? You know? And, you know, there's a little group of people there that, you know, are against you and were against me. And, you know, they sent out a bunch of trash talk and stuff. And they're Republicans, supposedly, you know. And it's just a tragedy. But that's okay. Because in the end of the day, it didn't matter. And so so now the mandate's clear. Look, when President Trump got elected this time, he was much stronger than he ever was before because he now knows the game. And so he's in there and he's signing executive orders and he's doing stuff and he's making things happen. And the country is better. 2 weeks later, the country is better than it was, before he got there. And that's unbelievable. The work he's done is unbelievable. And he doesn't rest and he just keeps moving. And that's what we all in Colorado have to do because we're a disgrace and we need to fix that so we can represent the country, not whoever we're representing now. And so all these people, you know, like when Dick Wadhams, I mean, come on, Dick Wadhams, you know, just go away. I mean.
the big goal for Colorado comes up March 29th. We got elected a chair. Britta Horn came to our Adams County one. And
she's a clear establishment candidate.
Yeah, clear establishment candidate.
And, I know.
Yeah.
She actually said to me on the phone when I was talking to her about her candidacy. She said, "Well, you know, Rich, when I was vice chair," I said, "Wait, when you were what?" And she said, "When I was vice chair," I said, "You mean at the illegal meeting?" She actually thought she got elected vice chair. And she thinks she was the vice chair. She wasn't the vice chair.
That's right.
I said, did you get the checkbook? Did you know? You know, you can't make these types of statements and people take you seriously after that.
Exactly. Well, we're going to have to find out. We're going to have to let you go now. So it's good to have you there in Jefferson County.
Thank you, guys. Thank you guys so much.
All right. Yeah. Thank you, Rich.
Thank you, Rich. Talk to you later.
Quiet there. And Charlene is saying he understands power, use it or lead it, use it or lose it. Where has Rich been? Rich has been around for a while. Rich, I think,
He went away. He's involved
in the Evergreen Tea Party, too.
He's got his own Mountain Tea Party group that once a month.
Right, exactly. Oh, yeah, and Britta Horn, Dr. Dino, is right. Now she says she supports closing the primary and she donated to the lawsuit.
Oh, yeah, she did. Sure she did. Lying. This.
Colorado, RhinoWatchCO.com. There are lists there of how people voted. And so you can see for yourself as opposed to.
That's a great list, by the way. I support the.
Right.
Peter Horn, just like KBB said, well, I support the lawsuit, not the opt out itself. Lying, and Britta's lying.
But we'll talk more about the race coming up. I think as people announce, I think it's going to be interesting. I know that Hope Shuffleman, the current vice chair, and Anna Ferguson, the current secretary, I suspect are going to run again.
They may or may not, depending who else runs. They've been working very hard right now,
though, on the counties. We've got one more week of county organization. organization of meetings. And I know this is maybe a little bit in the weeds for some people, but Rich is absolutely right. This is where it starts to change it. So like he says, so Colorado, I mean, if they can do this in California and in New York, we can do it here in Colorado too. And the legislature is helping us, right? By bag fees, egg prices, gasoline, electric vehicles, all the nonsense that POLUS is throwing out in the legislature, Second Amendment issues, right? They're making our jobs easy for us. But we have to fight. Otherwise, it'll get worse. So, hey, that's going to wrap it up.
That's it? That's our whole show. It's already over, Micah. It goes fast.
When we've got, on Wednesday, I want to talk a little bit, because I've been doing research on this, and it's just fascinating on exactly how Trump and Elon Musk and the Doge team have been able to do so much so fast. They were working on this for a long time. And when they pulled the trigger, it was just like dominoes falling.
And one of the things I want to go into, and there are a couple of good podcasts on it, but COVID-19, the model that was
the truth coming out about that.
That was rolled out is the model that came up for bioweapons. There's a health one where somebody gets, people get sick from a health one, which is very modest.
But there's another one for when you actually do it on purpose.
Well, yeah, bioweapons one. And so what?
Funny.
Well, it is in some ways funny, but that's what they adopted. All of a sudden, they said, no, you know, COVID-19. No, we don't use a health model. We use the military model to crush all dissent, and they did.
All right, we will talk about all of that. Hey, I want to thank Tom Tancredo, Rich Wyatt, everybody on Zoom, the great guys at BBS, and we'll see everybody on Wednesday.
See you on Wednesday. Can't be fast enough.